We're looking at the concept of how destruction can really be a binyan. We took a look through a churb in Europe, but it applies to all the churbanos, both on a macrocosmic and microcosmic level. Not that we understand it, but we've got up to saying is that the burning of the Beis HaMikdash is the Zman Leidus Mashiach. It's in those darkest moments of destruction where the next phase is given birth to. That's what we're going to try to understand over now.
So, I can understand that destruction would be for the purpose of construction. That's but why does the dust have to be destruction first? I mean, Hashem can build without the destruction first, right?
Yeah, that's how Hashem created the world. Why he did it that way, we don't really know. What we have set up to now in order to understand it is that you need a void in order for us to be able to create something. She wants us to be like kids in the aspect of being able to create something from nothing. Now obviously we'll never be void radiation behind. We don't have that. But to the degree that we're able to, Hashem gives us that opportunity. Which means he creates difficulties and lacks and voids in the world and enables us to fill them. Yeah. So instead of seeing the negative aspects of our lives as being negative, we see the destruction as being a destruction. On the contrary, it's an opportunity for me to build myself. That's really what those moments are, and that's what we're going to see now.
Rabbi Tanz said over and over again in the Shirim that the first level is to see what we should be, then to lose it and then bring it back. And if you didn't see it in the first place,
we don't know why. Why did Hashem do a dafka that way and not another way? That's awesome. We don't know. Why did Hashem set up that system? That they set it up. We can never ask why did Hashem do something. We can look after and try and understand from post my celebration what the purpose of this thing must be. When the Ramchal says why did Hashem create the world, and he gives all these answers that we're dealing with, you know, because he wanted to do good and whatever. That's all post my celebration. Pre-my separation, you know Hashem created the world? Because that's what the Bechira decided to do. Yeah, but why? You can't ask that question pre-my separation. We can't understand Hashem's motivations. Post-my separation, based on what we have, we can extrapolate back and say, okay, we understand what the purpose of this thing is. But why Hashem did what he did that way? Why so many apples in the world and not a few less? Why this? Why that? Why, you know, you couldn't have got away with a few less mosquitoes. Yeah, why one mosquito in the world less, the world couldn't exist, because otherwise Hashem wouldn't have created it. We don't understand any of that stuff. I'm not shy to understand. It's exactly the way it's needed in order to mevgale the oneness of Hashem. But why, how, where, we don't understand. Why did Hashem create the world in such a way that you can only, that the Ikka building is only after the Churban, etc. We see it in the base of Mikdash with Dafka set up in such a way that it could be destroyed. Moshe Rabbeinu could not come into Eretz Yisrael and build the base of Mikdash. Because had he come into Eretz Yisrael and built the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash could not have been destroyed. David HaMelech could not build the Beis HaMikdash, because had he built it, it could not have been destroyed, and it had to be destroyed. And Moshe Rabbeinu understood this. Because Moshe Rabbeinu would have asked once more to come into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem would have had to let him in. Hashem says to him, don't ask anymore, because if you ask, I'm not going to let you in. I mean, I'm going to have to let you in. So we see that Moshe Rabbeinu understood that. Okay, back off.
Don't know
what this has to do with Goy. I don't know. They have a different din completely.
This is supposed to be Adam Arishon.
This is Adam Arishon.
You didn't take it over that.
We are Adam Arishon.
We've seen the wrong.
Avram Avinu came along and took over what was called Yisrael, whatever Yisrael is, that Musa called Yisrael, which was what Adam Arishon was. And we inherited that from him. Yeah. What the Goyish world is, because they're also a small chalik of Adam Rishon as well. Shema Mitzvah B'nai Noyach is also an aspect of a certain aspect of Adam Rishon, the purpose of the world. But exactly what that is in our words, I don't know. But it's very, very different to what we are. Let's get that clear. Well, this might be a nice time just to introduce it once you've raised the subject and you're off back to Golis. It might be nice just to take this with as a chizuk. But we all need this chizuk, because we very often make this mistake. It's very hard in this generation to say Shalos Haini Goy. A very difficult thing to do. Living back in, you know, in the ghettos and in the Pale of Settlement, where the Goy and you were like, to say Shalos Haini Goy wasn't that hard, yeah? Because you stepped onto his side of the road and you got beaten. But we live in a world where the Goyim are, you know, to a large extent, very nice, very pleasant. Very often, sometimes even nicer and more pleasant than the Yin. Your bank manager could be a Goy, your house doctor could be a Goy, your accountant, and your friends and your relations and your social circle, the guy you play golf with, very nice dignified, sophisticated people, and they're welcoming into their lives, and you go to their parties, and they come to your parties, and we have very nice, healthy lives. We don't see the difference between a Jew and a Goy today, so clearly we don't. Yeah, there's a Rosh Goy, but there's also Rosh Jews. Yeah, there's the terrorists, right, but the Jewish terrorists as well. You know, so what's the difference? So this is a very big Nisoyim. This generation you need Nisoyim. Rav Simcha Wasserman once said, I was this one of Ted. There's a Gemara that says that every 70 years there's an eastern star that leads the sailors astray. The Gemara says every 70 years a new star comes and mabalbels and confuses the sailors. So pshat is that every 70 years there's a new philosophy, there's a new something in the air that confuses the Jewish people to what their task is. And Reb Simcha said he heard from the Chofetz Chaim that the previous generation is the same as communism. Starting with a scholar and whatever, that whole philosophical new world that existed until communism ended on the day that it ended. And to the day, by the way, he said it was almost 70 years to the day.
Right,
70 years to the day. Exactly where they calculated it from. I'm not going into all that stuff. It's not that important. So somebody asked Reb Simcha, so what's the star today? And he said it's the inability to see the difference between a Jew and a Goy. Which means it's not just some sort of philosophical thing, you know, racist thing or whatever. It means built into the Bria, the same as built into the Bria, communism was such a powerful force that future Gedolei HaDor closed the Gemara and ran out of the Beis Midrash. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky testified about himself that if the Rosh Yeshiva had not paid him and his chavrusa to carry on learning, he would have run out there, he would have fled. There was no way he could stay in the Beis Midrash. The power was so strong, the Yetzer was so strong to flee after communism that it messed up our senses. And that you see a whole generation came out got lost. And today, so one second, and today it's our inability to see the difference between a Jew and a Goy, and then we see the consequences. Rave at assimilation. And when you try and speak about assimilation, people don't know what you're talking about. They think you're nuts. They think you're a posh man. What's wrong? She happens to be a very nice girl. I'd rather my daughter marries a nice guy that's going to be nice to him, whatever, than marry some guy who's not going to be nice to him. Who cares if he's Jewish or not? You get intelligent people saying this. See, my grandparents never had a problem. Even though they were in South Africa and they lived assimilated, so-called assimilated lives or whatever, they did business and they socialized with goyim or whatever. But I remember my grandfather the first time, in the small town that I lived, married a shiksa. I remember my grandfather, I remember being upset or angry. He just didn't understand what we were talking about. It was like you're telling him the cow jumped over the moon. It was like, no, weiter, you know, reality, guys. So the minute he married a non-Jew, what are you talking about? He didn't understand what we were talking about. It was a shock. The foundations of the community were rocked. The Jewish boy marrying a non-Jewish girl, it was like unheard of. It was the first one. And he didn't understand it.
So when
he, not that he wasn't even shocked by it, because it couldn't have happened. And yet, he brought us up to be very, very liberal and very, you know, accommodating and very, you know, you have to treat people. We live in here, and you've got to be nice to everybody or whatever, etc. They weren't from Jews or whatever, but they had an inbred understanding that this is not min v'minay. Whereas we today don't understand it. We have, for example, the famous Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he's asked whether it's mutter to go to a non-Jewish doctor or to go to a Jewish doctor trained in non-Jewish medicine. And he answers back that l'chatchila no, because it's not the same body. The guy's not trained in your guf. But b'di'evet, since we don't have proper doctors that are trained in the Jewish guf, so that's the closest we have. So yes, you can. Now that Chassam Sofer leaves us completely flawed. We have different personalities, we have different neshamas, different kalim, but the guf, the state. Chassam Sofer says not the same state. It's not the same state. Even the body's not the same. And if you understand how the world's put together, you understand it has to be that way. Because if the neshama is different, and the neshama is what's generating the goof, then the goof's going to look different because the neshama is different. Because this horse that we have is a different job. You get different horses. You know, you get plowing horses and you get race horses. You can't tell me that they're the same horse. Yeah, they look the same and whatever, but if you put one of these short, fat horses with furry feet on the racetrack, you're not going to make too much buck, yeah? Or you get one of these sprinting thoroughbreds to plow your field, you're not going to have much to eat. You understand? They're different species. And the Lakudiyaz is, and we need to get in touch with this Lakudiyaz, we don't understand it. When we say Shalom Sani Goy in the morning, we don't know what we're saying. At best, you ask the kids, you go around, you ask people when they say Shalom Sani Goy, what do they mean? They'll tell you, in South Africa, they'll tell you it's the Schwarze, in America, they'll tell you it's somebody else. In Israel, you ask my kids, they'll tell you it's the Arab. Yeah, everyone's got his, you know, the scapegoat, you know, the worst guy in town he'll find. You know, that's kind of how we go around. If you're a bit more sophisticated, you'll say, Shalom Sani Goy, I'm the best guy. You know, you'll pretend that you're grateful for being better than George Bush, whatever, whoever the best guy in the world is or whatever. But we don't really appreciate what it means to be Jewish. And we've seen many times, I mean, that's what this whole faith is about, is that when you say Shalosh Ani Goy, you should have the best guy in the world in mind. Who's the best guy in the world? Who does the Torah say is the best guy in the world? Noach Tzadik. And if you understand who Noach was some real Tzadik. He was no slouch. We kind of get rid of Noach very quickly because of the Rashi there that says, you know, he was only great in his door, but had he lived with Avraham Avinu, he wouldn't have been so great. Okay, good. But that's Avraham Avinu Shalosh Ani Goy. But we have to understand that Noach Tzadik was Noach Tzadik. He spoke to God. You know, he was a real thing. And on him I say Shalosh Ani Goy. This little guy, yes, Shalosh Ani Goy. Machal Shabbos, you say me, not him. What's going on here? Let's get a little bit of kosher Jewish garb going in ourselves today. Today, you walk around. Go. You should try this sometimes. If you don't believe me, you have to try this out real. Go to any Haredi institution or whatever. Yeah, and ask. First of all, ask them. How many of them are embarrassed to be Jewish and frugal? You'll be shocked at how many hands go up. And second, ask them how many of them would Magaya if they found out they weren't Jewish. Bring me the ones that say yes. The few. Bring them in. We'll give them lunch even. I won't even change the budget on the lunch. There'll be so few. That's the vote out there today. The Goyim are quite anxious about this. So it's a real phenomenon. Because it's a real, real phenomenon. Because we don't appreciate what it means to be Jewish. My man, I'm Jewish and I have to do the mitzvahs. I'll do them. I'm a good boy. If that's what Hashem wants me to do, I'll do. But I suddenly discover that I'm not Jewish. So then who says I have to do the mitzvahs? And he mentions in the Sefer earlier, one of the best bochrim, one of the best yeshivas in the world, about to get one of the best shiduchim, suddenly discovered that he wasn't Jewish. Not because he wasn't Jewish, because there was a problem with the bobber, the conversion or whatever, something. They're going to do a gayus lechumra, and the guy said, hold on a second. Don't be not so quick, sir. Hashem called him in. It happened, there were two. That happened in a very short time between one in Lakewood and one in Ponovich. In both cases, the guy said, well, just a second. In my mail, I'm not Jewish. And he said, well, you know, take on all the stuff. You don't understand what it means to be Jewish. Then you're in. As Rav Nachman said, if you don't know what you're prepared to die for, you don't know what you're living for. You've got to find out what you're ready to give your life for. Then you know what you're living for. You're not prepared to give your life for the raw, ikka essence. I'm Jewish. You're not prepared to, then you're not living like a Jew. A guy who's not prepared to Magaya, so one second, a guy who's not prepared to Magaya, if you were trying to, he's not Jewish, right now he's not living like a Jew.
Then when is the star going to expire on this 70 year?
You want to do the cheshbon. So when did communism end? Take out your local or whatever. And then track through 70 years.
Before it
fell. Russia, basically. The Russia
was before it. Like the
happened. Listen, once again, to this day, I mean, we'll work out within a few weeks of each other.
In the next 70 years also, could they overlap?
But things always overlap in the system. And Nefesh HaChaim says it's mafurish. The bottom end of a system is always the top of the next system. If you want to look at the world or time as human, as the shape of a human being, so the way the mystics explain it is the feet of the system above fits into the head of the system below. It means they're always joint. There's always a commonality, and you see that in the handing over the generations. For example, halachically, Rabbi Yehuda Nossi, let's say, Rabbi Chia. Tanahu Pali. Rabbi Chia, sometimes in a Moyer, sometimes he's a Tana. Why? Because he was at the switchover. Huh? That's what I was looking for. Rav, Tanahu Pali. Rav was the Talmud of Rebbe, not Rebbe. Rav was the Talmud of. So Rav learned from a Tana, but he's really in a Moyer. So who is he? So he depends. Depends how you look at him. Yechasid, Tanoim, he's an Amoyer, but Yechasid, Amoyer, he's a Tana. So Rav can sometimes be a Tana and argue with a Tana, sometimes he can't. Do you see that manifest all through? There's always a shift in a generation. The Chofetz Chaim, for example, was, they say, from the Rebbe Chanan also, they say, was from like almost the previous generation. And yet he had Shaychus to this generation. There's always at the end of a generation, the beginning of a generation, you always have somebody who's that gesher, the bridge, who manifests into both. So yeah, there was already, I mean, you see it, what communism gave birth to was this equality thing. And that was what drove the inability for Yidden, who were the main forces of communism, to come out of there and build the state of Israel and etc., based on those hashkafas, the scholar, that we're all equal, everyone's the same, man, woman, everything, it's all one big, you know, Korach, we're all equal. Kola am kadoshim haim, yeah? There's no hierarchies in one, and that's what set up the next stage of not being able to see the difference between a Yidden and a Goy, and not being able to see the difference between a Goy and an animal. where people go and save the whales at the risk of, you know, destroying human lives and whatever because they can't see the difference. They don't eat meat because they don't want to eat their cousins. You know, despite the fact that their cousins eat their cousins, they don't want to fight because they're more sophisticated cousins. But you see that? That bubble, that breaks down. What this is giving birth to? I don't know. We shouldn't have to live long enough to without Mashiach coming to find out. Because we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. I mean, these are dark times in terms of where Klal Yisrael is. So hopefully what we've set up is this incredible equality and whatever, the response from the world to the Jews at the moment, with the rise in anti-Semitism and Yishmael and everything, is getting us back to understanding, hold on, we're very, very different. Not only are we different, but we're totally dependent on Hashem. We come through an incredible phase of being independent. Who needed Hashem? We have atom bombs, we have airplanes, we own half the world's banks. Who needs Hashem here? Hashem's slowly stripping all those things away from us to show us, hold on a second, God, you know, I left you alone for a while, look what a mess you've created for yourself, right? Total moral breakdown in society, the education system that's collapsing, your army's not that great as you thought it was, yeah? A bunch of kids with stones and knives, but you're running around in circles. You can't even defend yourself against them throwing rockets at you because the whole world's screaming against you. Rushach was almost prophetic. Rushach said, don't go into Gaza. When they asked him why not, he said, because the future wars against Israel are not going to be fought with missiles. They're going to be fought with public opinion. Right. And even if you'll be able to fight against them, the world won't let you. That's exactly what you swung at. Exactly. I mean, you have to sometimes look at what's going on in the world to understand Torah. What we saw now, a watershed in world history is the fact that you're not allowed to even defend yourself against terrorists anymore. That's Hashem tying your hands. It started with the first Gulf War, where they were throwing missiles, and Israel had to sit back and say, you know, America wouldn't let us do nothing. Hashem wouldn't let us do anything. Hashem says, I'll take care of you guys. You sit back. And when Hashem and let us unleash ourselves in Lebanon, he said, okay, look. He said, what happens when you try and do it on your own? Yeah? There was a lot less damage done by the Iraqis, who had much bigger missiles, when we couldn't do anything, then we were defending ourselves against Hezbollah with much smaller missiles. You have to stop and think these things through carefully. You'll come to some amazing conclusions about what's going on in the world at the moment. And the Chiyuv, Rav Tzadok says, and the Maharal says, of course, the Chiyuv to learn Torah, Hashem says, is Sokol B'Raisa B'Ora Lomoy. So you can do the reverse. Look in the world and learn Torah. And there's Torah to be learned from what's going on in the world. But that's all across Baruch Hu running the world. That's what's going on. But what the next star exactly, where the exact next Yisrael is going to be, I don't know.
When this one's going to end?
Hopefully when Mashiach comes very, very soon. Because that's the 15 steps that you will recognize, the 15 signs you recognize, or the pre-Messianic period, the Brisa, the Mishnah, the end of Sota brings down, the last of the 15 signs is Einal Mili Smeit, Rachel Avinu Shuvah Shemayim. They said that's not something that's like a consolation. It's one of the signs.
What does it mean?
That you'll have no one to rely on except Hashem. It means everything else will be stripped away from you. You'll have nothing to rely on. We're pretty close. Pretty, pretty close. All those 15 signs have been, they're all there.
What's the one before that?
I don't remember the list. I've given Sherim on that. Yeah, all of them. No, you go through all 15. The government will turn to heresy and based on idlers' nus. The wise men will be involved in all sorts of promiscuous activities. So we've had the president tried for whatever. And Tan Mokum Lahirich. But if you look around, you'll see that the so-called sophisticated leaders of the world have been brought low. That's the sugya.
What's the ultimate outcome of those who can't necessarily see the difference and yet dabble in both worlds?
Well, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you mean. There are those that can't see the difference.
Okay.
First of all, we have to know that we're also subject to the stoff.
Right.
So Yaakov Kamenetsky used the bribe to stay in Yeshiva. We have to find our own little bribes to make sure we don't lose sight of reality either. We have to remember we're Jewish. And a lot of things we allow into our houses are because we haven't accepted the fact that you're Jewish yet. So we have to be very careful as well. But you're talking about the other guys, right? So what's the question about them? So what's the question about us? We know that we have a problem at least. But that we have to guard against it very, very carefully. Yeah, so what are you asking? How you do that?
Okay.
Okay. You mean I get to ask the questions as well? I want to ask your questions, your Achmed.
So you'll have people who have a consciousness
that there's a difference,
but they still feel a need to mashiv some of that which
get the best of both worlds.
Exactly. So what's
when I saw the advertisement in South Africa for the Torah school, And the beginning of the year, they put up a big advert and said, get the best of both worlds, right? I teach my wife to leave. That's it. There's no way I'm sending my kids to a school. That they do give you the best of both worlds, I can live with. But that's your claim to fame? Why should I pick courses?
Well, Allah.
Yeah, that's what they meant.
Chabanash.
That you've got to give your kids secular education and Torah education, and that if you're doing it, do both of them very well. I have no time as well. And a chnami, that's what you're supposed to do, but that's not the poster you put up. That's not what you advertise. What do you do? It's a real big problem. That's the real nisayon today. How do you keep it out of the yeshivas? How do you keep it out of your home? What happens when your kids bring it into your home? Do you throw them out? Do you keep your kids? What they go to yeshivas? You have to listen to Pinkus tapes a lot. You have to take some Shimshon David tapes and you have to listen to them again and again and again until it starts. You know, 90 times it starts. Eventually the water on the stone starts making a bit of an impression. He was screaming this in America. He was screaming this in America. He said, America's about to fall into a terrible spiritual pit here because we're becoming God. I never knew what he was talking about until he shipped me off to America. I suddenly realized, oh, then I really got a fright. Then I really got a shock because to see Frumhidden who you know, that was a fraud. You know, you go around to kill you with secular Jews, whatever. So the fact that they, you know, they're chetzid in going or whatever, so fine. But you go into frum communities, thriving frum communities, with all the apparatus and the tafyoimi and the shir and everything, and it's hard to find a yid there. That's very fraud. So it's a big shock. That was what Shimshon was going around America screaming and screaming and screaming about. That's just sort. The way we eat, the way we dream, the books we read, the shifas we've got, what are we teaching our children? And we can't understand why kids wouldn't convert. To what? I've got everything the guy's got. Just with a whole bunch of responsibilities. So there's all the responsibilities. What am I lacking that a guy has? What does a guy have that I don't have? I have everything that the guy has. Yeah? So and just with all the stuff on my head. I wake up in the morning, I'm hungry, I can't eat, I've got to daven first. Saturday afternoon there's a game, I can't watch. Be a good boy, I'll keep Shiva Mrs. Brandoch and I'll fulfill all my tithes. What's the problem? He understands what it means to be Jewish. He has a sense that there's something noble, something. Where did he get that from? If we're living like God, the external trappings of our lives are, you know, the national religion of this country is Judaism, so we go through the stuff, you know. We sit in a sukkah for the kids, and we light Hanukkah candles for the kids, and we have a little Pesach Seder for the kids. Yeah, because when our kids have a bit of Jewish consciousness. Yeah. I have a friend who's married to a sheikh, so she lights five candles for the kids. Yeah, it's a very noble thing that. I got an email once from the guy. He tells me that one of the highlights of his life is when his wife lights candles for the kids on Friday night. She's a sheikh, so that's one of the highlights of his life. Okay. So we do all that for the kids. Did we ever step in a sukkah for ourselves? Because we tachas can't say shchina, and our children get a sense of all to come. That's what life's about. When I'm learning Gemara and the kid disturbs me, I close my door and talk to him straight away. And when I'm reading the New York Times, I let the kid try to disturb me. Now, where are we? What's important? What are the priorities? What do our kids learn from us about our Yiddishkeit? Not the mitzvah. I should draw a Yiddishkeit. Am I walking on proud to be a Yid? Not politically proud.
So building that pride, you're sure things are through your Shimshon tape?
I believe that one way to do it, and I'm trying to find easy ways, I'm sure there are much harder ways. One of the easiest ways is if you've got one of these NPC machines anyway, is, drill some machines for sharing it to you.